Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Break On Through. Here you can travel realms uncharted, blur the lines, break the chains, open yourself to possibilities waiting to be discovered on the other side. My name is Pam Ray. With me as always is my co-host, Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the group or the website to call in, to share, to listen and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. Now, make sure also to check out our other shows. We have up to 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everyone's taste. Also, make sure when you get a chance to check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. Now, for tonight's show, Rex and I ran a contest on All Poetry where we put up as a prompt the painting Distinct Connection by Wassily Kandinsky. We also did allow for people to choose their own painting or artwork of Wassily Kandinsky to inspire them or put a on-topic pre-write up on the topic board in Late Night Poets. And I, for one, am definitely looking forward to delving into tonight's poetry. And hello, Rex. What's up?
Good evening.
Hey. So, And Wassily Kandinsky, that was your idea, awesome idea. I always appreciate and enjoy his artwork for his use of color, shapes, you know, lines, and there's such a, and especially with this particular piece of artwork, Distinct Connection, there's a wonderful sense of balance and mathematics within the painting. Wassily Kandinsky was actually one of the artists who was called, what was the term the Nazi used for artists that they didn't agree with?
They ran exhibits too, I forget.
He was...
In fact, those exhibits that they considered artwork that was demolishing society actually got more views than the artwork they displayed for the true German thought at the moment.
Yes. And I want to say it was delinquent artist, but that might not have been quite the word, but it was basically, there was Wassily Kandinsky and so many others that were pushed away from the country,
they called it degenerate.
Degenerate, that was it. I knew it was a D word. I just couldn't remember. Yes, he was one of the degenerate artists claimed to be. But and the thing is, like you said, they get more views, and I actually would like to sometime do a show on more than just one artist that was considered degenerate, because I think those are the voices that need of history that need to be heard. And interestingly enough, Sunday, the 27th is World Holocaust Remembrance Day.
Hmm.
Yep. So like I said, great choice. I've said it before and I'll say it again. I love seeing what people get out of abstract artwork. And surrealism artwork. The one of the interesting things about Wassily is that his style changed throughout. Like, you can see artwork of his, like this particular piece, Distinct Connection, they're quite abstract. And then you can see ones that border on the line of a combination between realism and surrealism, or even a kind of a romanticism type feel to it. So really interesting to see how he processed and grew as an artist. It was actually believed, another tidbit of fact about him, is that he had that disorder where your senses get mixed up. I forget, again, something I forget what that's called. But it was believed that, he could taste colors.
Well, that sounds like a trip on LSD.
Well, he may have been doing that, too. But there is a specific disorder that does that. I actually read this book one time called The Man Who Could Taste Shapes, and like every time he would like taste something, like eat food, he could feel the shape as if he was touching, like not the shape of the food necessarily, but the shape that would be felt in his hands. But yeah, very much sounds like an LSD trip, but it is definitely a disorder, which I can't remember, but an intriguing one. All right, well, what do you think, Rex? You got any thoughts you'd like to share on the artwork or anything?
Nope. We can get right into it.
All right, well, I was kind of, chit-chatting a little bit because I had told Princess she could call in.
Synesthesia.
That's it. Yes. That is, yes. Synesthesia. That's That's what I was talking about. Though he never directly said it himself, it's believed by some of the things that he said in his quotes and his writings, and because of some way some of his artwork is, that he may have had that. Of course, you know, like you said, he could have just easily been tripping on something, too.
That didn't come out until 1943 or so.
Okay. Oh, LSD?
Yep.
I thought Wassily Kandinsky was around in, like, 1943. Because he was around
in Nazi Germany. Degenerate. He would have had to walk through the 20s and the 30s when the degenerate art movement was at its heyday because of Herr Adolf,
okay,
who was pushing it. And
yes,
he was in the company of the likes of Mueller, Van Gogh, and Picasso as degenerate artists.
Yes. Yes, he was actually, he was born December 16th, 1866, and he died at the age of 77, December 13th, 1944. So, yep, you were right there. That was the time era and that he had was and the the company that he hung out with. All right, well, at this point, Confess is not called in, and I want to go ahead and get the ball rolling. So why don't we go ahead and do that, go ahead and put up Diane's carryover from Break On, not Break On Through, from After Midnight, yeah.
There it is.
All right. This is Life is a Metal Paved, a Kenneth Slessor parody by Diane D. And we do have a recording for that. So let me find that. And here we go.
Life is a Metal Paved by Diane D. White picket fences, a barbed wire cloud, the brooding sirens and the climbing sewer. Up the brick walls, the color red is loud. This is your city, this is my country. Barns shingles like the crackle of dead oak. In store-bought baskets, weaving straw to straw. And not undone are splinters we revoke. This is your city, this is my country. Winds rude and fusing, storm and wet and whip, and hands of tsunamis that slap the face, of cracks that shatter sidewalks when it shifts. This is a city, this is my country. The hacks and hails with bale and minty straw, smoking their meadows, beggars in their streets, painting the hovels its own orchestra. This is your city, this is my country. End poem.
Wonderful reading right there, Diane. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Rex, your thoughts on this poem?
Well, it's biting at the difference between the city life and country life, so to speak, or at least living outside of the city in the, maybe not the metro area, but just beyond. Things are a little more pleasant, so to speak. She hits on the thoughts of brooding Simons and the climbing sewer up the brick walls. The color is red is loud, and hits on the thought of city life. And you get barn shingles like the crackle of dead oak and store-bought baskets weaving straw to straw. And then there's that notation of that which comes from the outlying areas into the city as products to be used, products to be sold, and even products to be eaten. But with the last line in each stanza, this is your city, this is my country, is that note, hey, you want to live in that type of world, that's fine. Don't bring it into mind.
I like that thought, the whole idea of the comparison and the idea of, you know what, if that's your choice, that's your world, but don't make it part of mine. I have to agree that this, you know, this is definitely a great parody type poem where she wrote to the rhyme and the meter and flow of the original poem, which had the repetitive line at the end of each stanza, you find this ugly, I find it lovely. And, you know, for me, and of course when I listen to you comment, I suddenly see it differently, you know, with the whole idea of comparing city life and country life. But for me, I also felt like that this is your city, this is my country, which first of all, it was a powerful repetitive line that gave food for thought. And it made me think about how oftentimes people don't think beyond themselves. And it gives kind of a sense of connection and community that is sadly lacking. Like too oftentimes, people don't think of the country, such as the United States or any country as a whole, but rather, you know, focused, you know, on themselves. I also like how it captures the beauty and the destructive forces of nature and then went along the lines of rebuilding a home, which I like that it can be taken literally as about being rebuilding a home. You know, and really it makes you think about how neighbors used to get together and you know, putting the barn up was something that everybody got together and did. But it also makes me think of the whole idea of rebuilding a country back up to what it was before, you know, it started falling apart. To me, there's this just really a strong message in this, and I like the way that it can be read and thought through in various ways. So really excellent write and very well done. All right, and what do we got next?
Animated Dust by Casey Day.
All right. And I believe we do have a SoundCloud for this one. So, here we go.
Animated Dust. Tethered in the spider's web, we all look to the morrow. With fates entwined, some eager dine on pity's sakes and sorrow. And when it's time for spiders dine, they hold the breath they borrow. They cry, oh why, and close their eyes, and plunge the final arrow. But some, though few, persevere through and create a new reality. Though on the web lay their deathbed, a future they foresee. They tuck their woes and meet their foes with steadfast, true agility, and beat the odds or die because circumstance hinders not ability. The difference between the egg and a potato when in toil, it's not the shell, for certain hell will meet them when they boil. One grows hard and one grows mellow, it's got naught to do with love, and though both be a handsome fellow, trial shows what they're made of.
Great read and write there, Casey. Thank you for the SoundCloud. Very much appreciated. And Rex, your thoughts on Casey's poem?
Well, it's a matter of thought. And the easiness is the angle brought through, the strength on what one sits on, as well as the arena as a whole, is you have the strength to stand on your own feet and deliver as such, or will you bend the knee and walk to someone else's tune instead of standing up for what is, in other words, between strength and weakness. Do you have the backbone or do you not?
I like that. I like that. The idea of having the backbone, you know, to stand up for what you believe in. Yeah, this is really great all the way through. I really like how the painting, Distinct Connection, made her think of spider webs and some really strong lines here. And like, oh, on pity's sake and sorrow, when it's time for spiders dying, they hold the breath, they borrow, they cry, oh, why, and close their eyes and plunge the final arrow. You know, there's almost that whole idea of, you know, the remorse that comes with having to be a spider, and it works really well on a metaphorical level. And they luck their woes and meet their foes with steadfast true agility and beat the odds or die because circumstances hinders not ability. I like on a technical level the inner and end rhyme in those lines. And I also like the idea of having that kind of that inner, the kind of person that has the inner strength, you know, to be steadfast, to beat the odds. And then that last stanza is a wonderful nod towards the saying that both the egg and the potato react to water in different ways. You know, obviously one becomes hard and one becomes soft. And so there's that real idea of who do we become and what do we become when we are thrown into the difficult moments of life. You know, what kind of, and both being a soft person has its own strength and being a hard person has its own strength. And on a side note, I don't know about you, but I just find spider webs, like there's a bridge that goes over the river that's, you know, in town, in, well, not this town, but in the town I used to live in. And the spiders, you know, build their webs on there and it just sparkles and shines. And I don't know, it's just absolutely intriguing and beautiful to me. And it's also just really intriguing how, you know, the instinct of the spider is to build such a beautiful and complex web. So I think that's really cool.
Well, they got to eat.
Yes, that is true. That is true. But it's whatever the, and yes, yes, Mr. Logical and Mr. Yes, they have to eat. You're right. They do have to eat, but, I mean, they could have been that God, nature, or whoever is in charge decided they would find a different way to eat. I mean, you know, there are spiders that I believe don't make webs and just burrow in the ground and jump on birds. But...
Yep. Oh, actually,
well,
that's true.
There
is a bird-eating spider in Australia.
Yes, there is. Yes, yes. And which is why I thought of that. I think Australia is like number one for most poisonous animals or something like that. But, yeah,
yep.
and obvious, yeah. So definitely the web serves a practical purpose, but, you know, out of that practical purpose comes something that's just very beautiful and intriguing to look at. So, yeah. I would not, you know what, I would stay far away from a spider that jumps on birds. I honestly would. Although, if ever invited, and I would go to Australia. I would just stay away from the spiders. And
there's the other 10 items that they've got. I think the record is that they've got the 10 deadliest animals in the world, poison-wise.
Yeah, and I believe the platypus and the other poisonous mammal both live in Australia. Or maybe the other poison. Well, I know the other poisonous animal is that cute little thing with the giant eyes. Like, it looks all sweet and innocent, but its bite is poisonous.
Let's see. They've got the taipan snake.
Something
lore. What are we talking about? Stonefish. There's the red back spider. What else they got? Blue-ringed octopus. Nasty stuff.
Oh, wow. Yeah, yeah, they have quite a variety. That's for sure. It's really intriguing. I mean, I have to say that I think Australia just seems like a really fascinating place as far as the kind of critters that ended up there. All right. So what do we got next?
This ship is in the harbor. Falling water, get the wall.
All right. And we have a SoundCloud for that. So here we go.
His ship is in the harbor by Martha Gettle. His ship is in the harbor tonight, and my baby is holding me tight. All I need in my arms I now hold, and I no longer feel alone and cold. When he left, I feared he'd not come back, and everything in my world went off track. But now that I am holding him, everything in my world is right again. He said he loved me, but I just couldn't see how he could truly be in love with me. My heart had been broke so bad before, I didn't think I could love anymore. When he reached out and took my hand, my heart revealed to me a different plan. When he had to leave and told me goodbye, I couldn't see past the tears in my eyes. He said he loved me, but I just couldn't see how he could truly be in love with me. My heart had been broke so bad before, I didn't think I could love anymore. But his ship is in the harbor again, and once more my arms are holding him. And I believe that his heart is mine, and we'll be happy together for all time.
Great reading right there, Martha. Thank you so much for this recording. And just a reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. Martha did write you a different one of Wassily Kandinsky's painting, The Odessa is in Port. And this painting is an example of his love for painting scenery in a very almost surrealism type way. It's interesting how the colors are very uniform in this picture, that there's a lot of earth tones. Even the sky is like grays and browns. And what I like is that with Martha's poem is that she looked at this painting and she wrote about not just what you see, but what you don't see. She writes about the ship. She writes about the harbor. But more importantly, she writes about a love story, a story of a sailor returning to his true love and the understanding that they are meant for each other. I thought this had a beautiful romantic quality to it. I really like the sense of hope in the chorus, and I like the ending that says, "And I believe that his heart is mine, and we'll be happy together for all time." Just a really, like I said, nice sense of hope within those lines, and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts on Martha's poem?
Well, since it hits on life before the turn of the 20th century, it walks into 19th as well as 18th century as far as the ship going is. I mean, they were just getting started with steam and coal powered. So out in Russia, it would have been these masted ships and sails because most things hadn't reached out that way yet. And they did have the locomotive, but still, the thought of getting into that kind of shipping was still very expensive at the time and over the horizon, so to speak, unless you had a load of cash to get into. But it still walks that line of thought, hey, when you went at one of these vessels, you could be gone a year, maybe more, because of where you were going, and everything depends on the weather itself, which is standard fare. And from 15th to the 18th centuries, tripping across the ocean was 4 to 6 months, depending on things. And resupplying was a year at the earliest. So this does hit on that notion of, hey, you know what? First wife is the sea. You take a second fiddle to that note because that's where the life is. And they were married to their ships in the ocean.
That is a really good point. I'm glad you mentioned the fact that it does bring us back to that time period, the 18th and 19th century, where the sailors were more married to the sea than to necessarily their wives, their family. It very much reminds me of that one song that you had as a prompt for Rhythm and Rhyme a couple months or so back. It has that kind of
Nantucket Sleigh Ride.
Yes, that was it. Yeah, it reminded me of that Nantucket Sleigh Ride. And you're right. This does it's a classic tale that shows us as you said that time period where a man went off to sea, because it was his job. But not just a job. It was a way he kind of found a sense of pride, and then the family was left behind to wonder and hope that they would actually return. So great observations there, Rex. I was doing some Googling and. Here's an interesting thing. Now, I was looking up the Odessa to see if it was an actual ship, because a lot of times artists would paint actual things. And I came across this little thing, which has nothing to do with her poem or her painting, but I still found it interesting. Odessa, the organization of former SS members, it stands for Organization der Amalischen SS Angehörigen, I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, was founded in 1944 to help Nazis flee Europe and escape justice. So it's interesting that an artist they considered degenerate had a painting that ended up being the ship name that ended up being the name of an organization that tried to help Nazis escape. So,
well,
it's always interesting.
Odessa was a port off the Black Sea.
Okay. Okay, cool.
I think it's
cool.
In the Crimea, I think.
I bet there was also those ships named the Odessa. I don't know. I also feel like, I feel like Odessa is also a name from mythology or something.
Mm-hmm.
But, I'll have to look that up sometime because it sounds very familiar. Like, I've seen and heard the name Odessa before, like, besides being a port. All right. And what do we got next?
Red Thread by Forgotten Dream.
All right. And who's giving this a read?
I guess I got it. Red Thread by Forgotten Dream. Her laugh crosses the miles, an eastern spring breeze, tickling wind chimes and caressing my naked ear like Vivaldi's stringed notes. Her broad smile is the March sun, cracking slate clouds, radiating, clearing cerulean skies, and coating my winter skin in warm, defrosting rays. My fingers trace the steady scrawl on the backside of pictures, linking us through the years and distance. Her statements a song, voice an embrace, thin arms snaking through the blackness of space to hold me and whisper hello. And point.
Wonderful read there, Rex. I really like this poem by Forgotten Dreams. First of all, I like how at the end he allowed the whisper of hello to drop off of the end stanza as if it is a memory of a whisper. I really like caressing my naked ear like Vivaldi's stringed notes. You can hear the music. You can feel the vibrations. You can just see the imagery so beautifully. And what I like is the overall, like, I like that he looked at that picture, just in connection, looked at the title of the picture and the lines in it, and saw a connection between two people. And I'm not 100% sure if this is somebody who died, but I get more of the idea. My thought is that it's more of a long-distance relationship, where there's that connection that is felt emotionally, a connection that is felt spiritually. Her broad smile is the March sun. You know, you don't see too many people when they write mention March and the sun together too much. But I like that because, you know, March is... such a borderline time of year. Of course, he's in California, so it might be different in California, but it's that new awakening of spring. You know, there's that, like, you can just feel like it's the kind of smile that bursts suddenly across somebody's face. You know, just a wonderful write that speaks to the feeling close to somebody when they're not physically close. So just a wonderful write and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts on this poem?
It's all about distance. A laugh crosses the miles. In that laugh, you hear, you can see her broad smile in the March sun. That's the easy thing on that side. Third stanza hits that notion of what that connection is. It's years, and it is miles. And then, again, thin arms sneaking through the blankets of space to hold me and whisper hello. that hits on the notion of not just that you run this as computer, but no, this is telephone, and not just telephone, cell phone. The ease of reaching out and touching someone at any point during the time of day, because he hits on that first stanza, clearly hits on that note. He hears the voice right there in the moment, caressing my naked ear like Vivaldi string notes. This phone right there, the coating my winter skin and warm the defrosting rays, it is the notation of the smile being that warm in that moment, despite March being the thought. And the idea, he's looking at the pictures, which do separate them. They're aged, they're yellow, and there's some notations on the backside of the pictures, which hits on that note. And then again, it hits a voice and embrace, thin arms sneaking through the blankness of space. So there is that ease of reaching out in the moment.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up, that the I thought of the cell phone and the ease of reaching out in the moment. I missed that, but you're right. There is that whole idea of being able to instantly connect with somebody, with somebody's voice. And as you said, the ease of just picking up the phone. And so very cool comment there. All right. And what do we got next?
Nihilistic Moment by Julie Buck.
All right.
That one's yours.
Okay. Yeah, I kind of figured, but I should have waited. All right. A Nihilistic Moment by Julie Buck, and it goes like this. What's it all for? What does it all mean? Someone once told me not everything has to mean something. Cool, because it doesn't. Self-reflection is dangerous when unprepared. Unwanted memories, unwanted because they are greatly wanted. Sometimes, to put the point where it is physically aches, irony blows. I've done shameful things. I know my heart is pure. I don't like asking why, yet why is always my entree. A la carte, of course. Never a better word than bittersweet. Funny how I hate change, yet want and need change. So much about me. No, it's not funny at all. In fact, it's cruel. And don't give me that baby steps thing. Screw that. That's just another way to ease my guilt about doing nothing. Save for making plans of which I know I'll never keep. The proverbial they says joy lives in us all. Guess mine got evicted for non-payment. My knees weak, my heart palpitates its way to anxiety, and I can't even shut down and suck on denial. I simply am a whiny, unproductive, inept, feeble, fat, questioning, angry blob of unmoving human waste who's lost or killed everything good in my circle. And damn, I always thought there was more to me than that. Don't kid yourself, little filly. I won't look you in the eye, but we know all we're doing here is waiting to die. So do these 10 pounds you lost, so do these those 10 pounds you lost really matter? Does that A your son got on his spelling test make any difference? Fuck no. It's just fluff and filler. Something to do until that day, a clever distraction until the main attraction. My son just told me, no, Ma, that A won't matter when we die, but it definitely matters while we're alive. I refuse to be distracted anymore. End poem. Wow, that was definitely a hard-hitting write. And Rex, your thoughts?
Nihilistic's the right bite to it, especially with that event.
That's for
What's
sure.
it all for? What does it mean? And self-reflection is dangerous when unprepared. True. Sometimes. And then the thought, irony blows. Yeah. But then she hits on that next line down. I've done shameful things. I know my heart is pure. There's a contrasting note to being nihilistic, but knowing your heart is pure. So in that there is some semblance of understanding that there is a notation to that, which is, and there's some faith in there somewhere. And I do like the thought of, it's always my entree, a la carte, of course, meaning you pick and choose your own matching entourage to fit the moment, which ends up being bittersweet. And there is a note in the end. At the end, it does nothing really does matter. But when you are alive, those things do matter. So there is a point for living, unless you absolutely decide, fuck it, it's time to walk off world.
Absolutely. Yeah, I really like that you pointed out that part where there's that contradiction with the idea of there's that faith within the nihilistic thought. And it really is, to me, that speaks of someone who so badly wishes that they could believe that nothing matters, because, when you feel that strongly about things, it sometimes becomes overwhelming, and sometimes you just want to walk away from the emotional pain, the physical ache. I too like how the parts were separated with that irony blows. The way she, like I always say, she separates her stanzas so wonderfully to give you that essence of the pause, the pitch, and the punch. I really like how she has a combination of self-loathing and humor. And I like how, Rex, that you brought up in the end, it suddenly is that realization that things do matter, and they will either, and sometimes they matter in this life because they will help move us along. They will help secure our future. But sometimes there are those things which don't matter in this life. They simply matter in the next. I really liked the edgy imagery of angry blob of unusing human waste who's lost or killed everything good in my circle. And damn, I always thought there was more to me than that. And don't kid yourself, little silly. I really like how this takes on the idea of somebody having a conversation with themselves. Don't kid yourself, little silly. Sounds like a John Wayne line.
I thought that John Wayne line was, I'm going to wrestle me a grizzly and kiss me a pretty girl. Or is it the other way around?
It may have actually been something like that. Wasn't that, who was the guy that wrestled bars? Was Daniel Boone or the other one?
Boone and Crockett were known for their outdoors.
Yeah, Davy Crockett, that was it. Yep. Davy Crockett wrestled a bar. Oh, there's Jeremy. Maybe we can get him to call in and hang out with us. I see he's jumping into the hot tub. All right. And what do we have next there, Rex?
Geo, me, try, by Naomi Sarah.
Now that is a clever title. And we do have a recording for that one. So here we go.
Geo, me, try. I gasp, struggling to exist inside the stricken world of cutting lines, triangles, squares, all those forms with sharp, pointed edges, trying to enter the comforting, smooth softness of hugging circles, small, sliced in half, shot by arrows, or burnt dead, bleeding in red, choked in blue, encircled by spikes of piercing crown. And I shudder under a blackened moon, stormy clouds, strikes of lightning, hiding within a lower corner, my blood-strained eyes staring out upon the twisted rails and broken rungs of two short ladders, incapable of climbing to reach the smothered sun. I tremble and cry out five words. I am here. I exist. Words smudged out, tossed far to the opposite side, out of my reach, gone silent as I slowly slide deeper and deeper, disappearing, slipping outside the frame into oblivion.
Wonderful read and write, Naomi. Thank you for the recording. Very much appreciated. I have to say, I really like, first of all, how she played with the title, stretching out geometry into three different words. Meaning earth, obviously, and then adding the words me and try onto that. And the idea of I struggle to me, it speaks in the idea of feeling like you struggle to fit in this earth. I really like the way she played with format and spacing, especially as near the, like, I like how this has a flow, like a connection between two points, and that it comes almost like the whole drifting amongst the constellations. It feels like, as she says, she has I can barely read the word disappearing near the end because she has it in such teeny tiny font, which I think is just absolutely brilliant and really conveys physically and emotionally the idea of feeling like you're losing your sense of self, your sense of meaning. Bleeding in red, choked in blue, encircled by spikes of piercing crown, and I shudder under a blackened moon, stormy clouds, strikes of lightning. There's something both very spiritual and violent within those lines. To me this really feels very much as if, like, some of the imagery speaks of the crucifixion of Christ and the offering of the blood. And I really like I am here, I exist. And the fact that it's that still small voice, because sometimes life just brings us down so much that we don't have the strength that comes with yelling. The strength we have is the strength that comes with the whisper inside ourselves. I also get the feeling of kind of like there's a very not melancholy, there's a sad, painful darkness to this. This kind of lingering between life and death. I also really like the imagery of trying to enter the comforting, smooth softness of hugging circles, but they are small, sliced into halves, shot by arrows or burnt dead. That whole idea of feeling like your support system is falling apart. I just found this a beautiful and emotive light, and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts on this poem?
It's getting lost in a world that has become abstract to the point of absurdity. You hit on the thoughts of triangles and squares. And there's that notion of trying to fit a round peg into a square hole. All those forms with sharp, pointy edges. That fits on everything seems to be sharp. The edge these days. The piercing crown, circled by spikes with piercing crown. That hits on the notion of not just abuse, but leveled to a point where you're derided. You're thought of as less than nothing to be given that kind of a thought. And the disappearing ending, being that, it is kind of hit on the notion of not just disappearing, that's the metaphorical angle. It's ending up being a wallflower because that much attention is paid not.
Are you still there? Am I still here?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, no, I like how you brought up the abuse and the idea that how disappearing doesn't just work metaphorically, but also works on the idea of becoming a wallflower. And so oftentimes when people are abused emotionally, physically, and they go through that kind of trauma, they tend to sink into themselves. They become those wallflowers. So I think using the term wallflower was a perfect observation there. And I liked that what you noticed about the poem. So very well said there. And what do we got next?
View of Murnau by Xylophonic Blues. And movement reclining, standing and lengthening, I stretched paper, took my brush in hand and remarked, Jasper Mountain emerge amongst landscapes, restricted palette, galvanized clouds, shrill your distance of tremendous force, pages softened by hand-aged ivory, shale's essence grasping daylight's puzzle of hues. Sandstone palms stammer where minds are born. Pewter ridges opening up exhaustive. Bottomless crevasses, oxygen, menacing lopes. Opaque summits, marble sky. Shadows fostering night. Flying westward, chasing the sun into tomorrow. Forbidden lay in winds sweeping, drizzle until the evening of the following day, in heavy silence, timeless here afar off, magnitude winging walls of turquoise dew, transparency spirit of mind, faith intensified capacities air, pendulum bulwark, midnight's masonry washed, brilliance and external mediation, red within the violet warm and cold, linen canvas back to yesterday, rising violet lines and edges converge. Outer contour, painting, silent poetry. Subtleties shy of the mountaintop. Depicted objects rather than the illusion. Cornflower sunshine was not an outsider. Light emanated from within. Smoothness and shadow probe. Galaxies, granules, the essence of green. Instead of the three-dimensional artifice. Somber in black, smudged gypsy cheekbones, horizontal in mind for the two-dimensional truth, ochre's exclusion of color, soundless of tones artistic, temperament inclined, immobilized the two opposed movements whose linear boundaries extend into depth, blue within the violet, forward and backward blind, pine trees creak and lumber off, lime's interior, poetry could be a speaking picture. Volume, its ranges, spatial line.
wonderful read there, Rex. And Xylophonic Blues wrote to the painting View of Murnau by Wassily Kandinsky. And I find that a particularly intriguing picture with its, he kind of, a lot of his artwork seems, has a kind of a use of using flatness, like there's, if that makes sense. And what I really liked about Xylo's poem is that, first of all, the scattering and stacking of the stanzas, so that there's this real sense of movement. It very much reminds me of how your poetry, Rex, always has a physical sense of movement. I also really like how he's writing from the perspective of the artist creating and the wonderful use of colors. But it's not just the colors that are mentioned, like the Jasper Mountains and the galvanized clouds, but the idea of sandstone palm stammer where minds are born. To me, the thought of, you know, having a physical reaction to the emotions felt. Transparency, spirit of mind. I thought that was a wonderful line. It focuses on the idea of what a meditative and spiritual experience it is to create a work of art. And I like the fact that it's not just the imagery, but it's also the sound. Pine trees creak and lumber off. And lumber off, that was, I have to say, very clever with its wordplay in the idea that, you know, the trees speak, but in the end they become lumber. And I just, you know, that using a word that has dual meaning, I thought was very cool. And I like how the end lines connect both the artist and the poet, how one creates a picture with painting, with physical colors, and one creates that artwork with words, a speaking picture, and such a wonderful way to connect, connect artists of all forms throughout history. I thought this was just a stunning write and very well done. And Rex, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
And you hit on what was it? You hit on a thought later in the piece. Horizontal in mind for the two-dimensional truth. Reality, two-dimensional. What you see is what you get, so to speak. But it's also done abstractly and with an impressionist feel to it because of how he's lit into everything. But also, well, not just lit into everything, lit into the picture itself. This comes across as almost a paint-by-number theme expressed in the voice through how each aspect of the landscape is born. I mean, future riches opening up exhausted, bottomless crevasses, oxygen's menacing slopes, opaque summits, marble sky. So it's almost walking as a paint-by-number scheme drawn out in the thought of how it came to be as such. I'm still describing it quite well to the point of offering up the thought of color and image fill, because it is a powerful piece to begin with. But writing it in the manner of hues and daubs and tussles of sorts that work with it, galaxies, granules, the essence of green, hitting on that notion of how one makes the color that they're looking for. Somber in black, smudged gypsy cheekbones, ochre's exclusion of color. That's another nice touch. Then he hits on artistic temperament inclined, immobilized to opposed movements. Again, hitting on the thought of what's behind the background itself. I did like that thought, pine trees creak and lumber off. That was a nice touch. And then it finished out, lines interior. Poetry could be a speaking picture, volume. This ranges spatial line. I like the back end of that because it finishes out the thought of it. It was kind of a paint-by-number piece, and he kept that throughout and offered that note at the end to speaking picture.
I like that. I like that you brought up the thought of the paint-by-number piece, because as I was mentioning at the beginning of the show, there's such a sense of mathematics within Wassily Kandinsky's artwork. And so the paint-by-number idea really fits in well there. I also like how you mentioned that there was a couple places where it gave thought to the idea of, the what's behind the painting. So really cool observations there, Rex. Very well said. And I'd like to welcome Confess to the show. Welcome, Confess. Glad you could be here.
Hey, guys. Good morning.
Good morning. And I know you have to be up really early, so you have to read and run. So Rex will go ahead and grab your poem and get it on the board so you can give it a read for us.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Well,
same. Hello.
There you go.
Mine looks a little brighter. It's so weird. Okay. Are you guys ready?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Okay, this is Abstract Transitions. Kandinsky's thought. Quiet beauty holds my soul. Quaint little daisy scowl, orgasmic greenery of German quo, forms flew away to shine. Interpretations inspired this slight feud. Daisies blew away the stained solace I once sought. Grind sailors breathe my lovers before we board, we escape there. Taunting slaves bewitched into a splendor. Pouncing rods dance along the brush. New freedom becomes me. I glance sweetly across at her. Pesky flattery, torn apart my eyes. Van Gogh, Susanna, seeking solitude. The light bristles ranging the pages. Fall creating static. In Marneau, mountains distant. This transition of my fame, no more expressions but abstraction that rests inside yesterday, there, in Marneau, my lover, close yet far, adjusting her place while no longer opposed to my change to paint this masterpiece, this beautiful abstraction for the first time. Can't you see my heart in the middle of this canvas? Worshipping the greats, refuted, hate no newest saint, fun hues and false conclusions, this I died with transfusion. In my know, they say they have changed my stroke. A brush, what fuss, my mighty glee as death calls my name. I never left my know with shame. In poem.
Wonderful read there, Confess. I really am glad that you called in to read it yourself, because I always feel like a poet knows best where they want to put the emphasis and put the pause. And I really enjoy when we get people writing to the same prompt, like you and the last poet wrote to the same painting, and it's interesting to me always to see different takes. And Rex, your thoughts on this poem?
All right, you hit that second stanza with interpretations. That kind of hits on the notion when you start working within a medium that you might not have been hitherto into, but something strikes a chord because of what you see, and then you kind of walk that that medium and then own it as yourself, because this is definitely a different type of picture. I mean, you should look at the this is kind of an oddity to the shape in the background. So everything is bent a little bit too much. Yet it works as a picture itself. just for the beauty that's offered. And I like sort of painting rods danced along the brush. There's a note to my guest wife or girlfriend at the moment. New freedom becomes me. I glance sweetly across at her. So there is a notion of he found something in this in Murnau itself that appealed to him as well as the new art that was being expressed at the time, which was abstract and tinted with other thoughts to go along with it. A little, like I said, transition of my saying no more expressions but abstraction that rests in yesterday there. I like that thought. Okay, then you hit on, in Murnau, my lover, close yet far. There's that notion of supporting in the moment. I like the way you finish out. They say I've changed my stroke. A brush which fuss. There is a kind of notation to maybe he was walking off the edge, so to speak. My mighty glee as death calls my name. I never left Murnau with shame. Kind of hits on that note that he really enjoyed whatever time he spent in Murnau. It was where he himself maybe had an epiphany as to what he and his art was supposed to mold into in the coming years.
Really well said there, Rex. I like how you mentioned the idea of the molding of self, the changes to come within the year. And you're right, this really does speak well in the voice of the artist in that particular time period of his life. So really great observations there. And confess, I like that you did your research, as mentioned in your AN, and looked into his life and his artwork. And he did have an always evolved, it seemed, constantly evolving style. And as you mentioned, there were critics who claimed that he just copied, you know, Van Gogh and Cezanne's and Fog's style of abstract art. But, you know, as you mentioned, Ian, I would say he was inspired. You know, and that is so true because we're all, there's nothing new under the sun. I mean, you know, the Bible says it. I believe the birds said it, if I have the right band. The song Turn, 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 you know. We all learn and get inspiration from somewhere. I like that you give a nod to the artist, but not just him alone, but to other artists, to that time period of his life. And I like, in Murnau, my lover, close yet far, adjusting her place while no longer opposed to my change. I feel like that speaks to both about his wife, but perhaps also to about his love for creating, his love for work, for artwork. And worshipping the greats, refuted hate, no newest saint, fun hues and false conclusions that I died with transfusion. This I died with transfusion. Wonderful rhyme and flow within those lines, but also a great thought to the idea of it is all, so oftentimes those who speak with a new voice that are quickly people want to shoot down with hatred. They don't want to accept that when it comes to forms and of art, things are constantly flowing, constantly changing. Just a really strong write and very well done. And before you go, was there anything that you wanted to say about your poem?
Only that I was practicing how to say Murnau, and I still said it wrong. and besides that, I felt very inspired by this, the painting, and I didn't want to do a disservice to him by just going with my own little spat. So I was like, you know what, let's do a little research on abstraction, even abstraction in poetry, and how like an extraction not only is a format list weird, but you don't have to rhyme all the time. But me being the person I am, I don't know, I love rhyme. But I in certain points, if you notice, I did it, and I just kind of just let it free flow. And that in itself could be considered abstraction. And then not only that, speaking in, of extraction, the reason why it's called abstract transition is because of his change from figurative painting to the to abstraction painting. And like you said, in my like I referenced in my AN, you know, of that the time span where people was even trying to kind of, you know how they do it now in the news, they try to combat people against each other. They were trying to do that, and in the last stanza was like, no, I don't have any hate for them. You know, I love them. I actually want to be them in certain ways from that inspiration, and if I die because I changed my way of painting, then so be it. I would die with that change, and that's what I wanted to, you know, kind of give his voice to, is that he didn't have any shame of his change, because it actually kind of made him even a better painter, I think. I think this painting is beautiful. But that's
absolutely.
It.
It
I
like is. That. I like
don't
that.
Know if they mentioned if he had any impressionistic leanings in him, but there is a touch of impressionism that walks in this too, just the way things are kind of drawn into each other and slightly unfocused a bit.
Mm-hmm.
They're really, yeah, you're right,
oh.
Rex, there is.
Excuse me. And Pam, you were right. And when it says, my lover's close yet far, adjusting her place while no longer opposed to the change. You were right in that sense that there was a double meaning there. It was like, he's just glad, or in my head, I'm thinking, it's not what he told me, right? I'm just thinking.
Oh, cool. Well, just so you know, I have a giant dartboard with random comments on my wall,
oh.
And I throw a dart, and whatever it lands on, that's the comment I make, and sometimes I'm right, and most of the time I'm not.
So you are right on point with that, because, I mean, sometimes when you're trying things new, you don't know if it's going to be any good or not, you know? So...
Right,
oh, absolutely. Well, you got to try to read. Yeah, absolutely. I went to sleep, and then I was like, wait, I forgot to read. And I looked up. And I was like, oh, my God, it's almost time to be over. So, yeah, thank you,
well,
guys.
I am glad you remembered that. And, and you were – now, Rex, you were saying that his painting reminded you of the expressionism type.
Impressionist. With a little touch of blurriness to emphasize color and motion.
Yeah, and you're right. There is that emphasis of color and motion. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah,
oh,
very
and
cool.
If you guys noticed, I even changed my type of writing, like my style, to fit this poem. I feel like we both changed our ways for this moment. Because I usually don't write like this at all. So I was like, I'm going to take a chance.
Yeah. You know, I was actually going to mention that when you mentioned that you usually you're a rhyming poet, and here you wrote more free verse, but you tossed some rhyme in. And I could really relate to that, because when I first came on All Poetry, I was very neurotic in my thinking that if you wrote a rhyming poem, you wrote it all in rhyme. If you wrote a free verse poem, you wrote it all in free verse. And I learned over the years to really let go of what I considered my own chains, the thoughts in my mind that were keeping me from experimenting with poetry form. And now, although I am more of a free verse poet, I will... occasionally, like, I'll write in rhyme, or I'll do like you did, where like just toss in a rhyming stanza or two, because it just feels right in the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh my God, I love y'all so much. I'm gonna go to sleep now.
Well, we are glad
I'll see
you are
tomorrow.
Part of yes, you take care and sweet dreams. Have a good night.
Sweet dreams. You too. Bye bye, Rex.
Snagfest.
All right, Rex, what do you got for us next?
Foundation's Eyes by Daniel Descino. I was born from love and attraction for Athens, the quarks. When the first sunrise was that welcomed me in, I moved forward. A journey of progression with no concept of the past begins to venture forth. To begin from the soft and gentle flowing fields of vision and touch, colors merge to shapes, and everything caresses my skin. And the air carries with it the mystery of sound, audio, harmonious mastery of vibration, and the strange creatures around me that add to the symphony. There is something deeper. Shapes form from colors. Noise becomes understanding. Touch becomes a tool. I feel it. Something. So onward with empty mind and open eyes, and inward to the roots of beginning, to the bricks of foundation, to the elements that define, inward, infinitesimal, yet a mountaintop, the peak of awareness. I see nothing different, just all the same, everything to the nucleus, the same. Onwards, past the visible, past the audible, past the perception of touch. From the mountaintop, I am lifted skyward to the heavens on unseen waves. The heat from atomic dancing, I ride the hidden red, the electric magnetism that radiates with harmony, the warm, healing touch in the starshine hand, the power to see through it all, and the energy to destroy, and to be lifted and flown on photonic sails, cradled by solar winds on infinity's ocean. It's all together, the deep inner of atomic, the vast galactic shores, and the energy connection, all is one. End quote.
That was a wonderful read there, Rex. I really liked how you, let your voice kind of trail off in that way to emphasize that end line. Daniel's writing just, it's so stunning in the fact that it, and especially this right, where it's the spiritual and the scientific living side by side. I like that there's this sense of balance, a sense of harmony, and he touches on the idea that there's these vibrations throughout the universe that connect one to another, and the air carries with it the mystery of sound, audio, harmonious mastery of vibration, and the strange creatures around me that add to the symphony. You know, to think that the universe creates its own music and that we are a part of that music, it's such a beautiful and profound thought. I did have to look up the word quark, which I probably shouldn't have. I probably should have remembered that from science back in high school some many odd decades ago. But I do appreciate poems that use words that I have to Google, because then I get to learn something new, and that is something I always enjoy. I really like that he says, so onward with empty mind and open eyes. To me, that speaks really well on the whole idea of that if we're going to move forward in this adventure of learning about the universe, of learning about ourselves, we can't go with those preconceived notions. The heat from atomic dancing, I ride the hidden red, the electric magnetism that radiates with harmony. Really wonderful sense of connection between all the atoms of the universe. Just really powerful lines. And I also really like past the visible, past the audible, past the perception of touch. It all becomes about seeing with that third eye, that different perception. I really thought this was very well done. And Rex, I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts.
Well, foundations was the right term for this, since he walked subatomic within everything. But it's that third one that walks, because since the second one hits on birth, as does the first one, a journey of progression with no concept of the past, begin to venture forth. To begin from the soft and gentle flowing fields of vision and touch. Colors merge to shapes and everything crests to my skin. There's that notation of feeling and seeing in colors. And again, the same thing with the next one. The air carries with the mystery of sound. There is something that you can note in what carries on the wind if you actually sit and listen to the sound that comes to one's ears. And then there's something deeper. Shapes formed from colors. And again, transversing that angle of looking on a two-planed existence from a three-dimensional thought and working beneath the subatomic structure and looking at life, at things and movement and sound from that level. See the color from there, see the shape from there, and walk within that foundation. Because he had the bricks of foundation, the elements that define inward, infinitesimal. There is the, if you can walk the path, there is, it is infinitesimal and is ever blooming if one is to open their eyes, as he hits on with that sort of the challenge in opening his eyes to see the interconnective angles of everything.
I like that. I like that you mentioned the foundation being the interconnectedness. Really great observation there. And all right, what do we got next?
I just put it up. Weaver of Dreams. You've got a SoundCloud for it. It is, where is it? Change.
All right, then. Oh, all right. I am going to save that for your After Midnight show because the audio didn't get in.
Okay.
We do have a couple other ones that have recordings, one from Diane D. and one from Richard Wiseman.
Well, you got Latitudes and Longitudes by Ava Paul Hussey.
Right. Okie dokie, Smokey. All right, let me sit up a little more straight and comfortable. I'm starting to kill my own back. All right, this is Latitudes and Longitudes by Eva Palazzi, and it goes like this. Between A and B, the shortest voyage is linear, even if headwinds ruffle the logograms alongside all the shunned oriental shores through abyssal currents are incognizant of steering and sextant. Over redrawn parchment beneath bulging sails, Maria, Nina, and Ahor, diagonal ropes trisect latitude and longitude of the nautical miles loosen the sheaf. When cusses climb Italian and turns with Spanish onto the Bermuda Triangle's acute angle peak, your root stands guard in the crow's nest, toothless land, black moon above bloodily waving sand between Christ and Quasicoli, tied together, torn apart, the shortest route. Christopher was worth it, and poem. Oh, wow, I gotta say, that's just got some powerful lines in it. And Rex, your thoughts on this poem?
Well, I like that thought, the last line, but also the bringing up his three ships, Maria, Nina, and Ahor. Nice touch there. But she used the the thought well from the picture itself, running the thought of, where was it, steering and sextant, bulging sails, trispec latitudes and longitudes, nautical miles, loosened sheet. There was quite the thought. And often, then dropping in the Bermuda Triangle, a nice touch with that, the crow's nest. And I like she dropped in Christ and Quetzalcoatl tied together, torn apart, the shortest route. Yeah, that hits on the note of the Mayan and the Inca being devastated with what came not too long after that. So this was different and quite the piece.
It is. I like that this is what she saw when she looked at this painting. And I have to agree with you. That was a great ending there with the idea of asking, making the ending question. And I, too, really liked that she mentions the Columbus's three ships and how the one was the Maria, the Nina, and the Whore, because the Pinta being Spanish slang for painted whore. And I like how there's this, she puts the connection between she mentions the Bermuda Triangle. When Cuss's climb Italian turns with Spanish onto the Bermuda Triangle's acute angle peak. I thought her use of different lines and measurements and how she delved into the art form of reading a map and how it's been such an important part of history. I really liked that. And also the diagonal ropes, trisec latitudes and longitudes of the nautical miles, loosened sheaf. Just a really great write on the whole idea of the travels that have been taken throughout history and have changed history. Some for better and some for worse. You know, so excellent write and very well done. And what do we got next?
We got Purple Rain by Diane B.
All right. And we have a recording for that. So here we go.
Purple Rain by Diane D. Purple's punishing storms capture mysterious and mindful travelers, plunging through livid hues, weary. Within the mass broods quandary. Night pacers with zygote-like tails go wriggling their way from magenta, like spotted salamanders taming fire. Clouds following under the turbidity. So the littlest ones traveled the rain like rats traveling New York streets. Each reality became more than just a time in time. It became existence. The disparity between all movement and flight is cluttered, not clamored. Raining down our shards, puce shattered, screaming with pulsating periwinkles. Orchids oiling in their own sweet that some said gave off an odor of caffeine. Snuck into the cracks where eagles hide. Sentries guard the violet passages east. Paint onto the night canvas the reeling of pewter plums or pale pomegranates as they flitter through the purple rain to leave behind the mulberry mayhem. End poem.
Wonderful read and write, Diane. Thank you for the recording. Much appreciated. And Diane wrote to the painting Twilight by Wassily Kandinsky. And Rex, your thoughts on this poem?
Well, she covered the twilight angle well. And she did with some alliteration, purples, punishing, spotted salamanders, pewter plums or pale pomegranates, and the mulberry mayhem. She kept to all those nice full-on and off-scented purple colors. I mean, purple itself, you got a mulberry, pale pomegranate, pewter plums, all nice touches to purple itself, and periwinkle as well. That was another nice drop in. And what was it? Orchids oiling in their own sweets that some said gave off an odor of caffeine. Boy, that hits into a nice thrust of thought. Orchids, not so much the flower, but the supposed flower and the odor of caffeine. And it's on the notion of people there that are too, let's see, orchids are delicate. So it's too delicate to go outside, so to speak. And this does hit on purple rain and the twilight itself, and it hits on that notion of not squandering the twilight or the purple rain itself, because you know what? It's fascinating to walk inside that world instead of hovering inside safely.
That is so true, Rex. It is. It's such a beautiful and profound time of the night that should be appreciated. And I like that, as you mentioned, she uses the color purple, but in a variety of forms, such as violet and mulberry. I was particularly drawn to, so the little ones traveled the rain like rats traveling New York streets. Each reality becomes more than just a time and time. It became existence. I like how that stanza alone, that stanza actually would make a really good prompt for a contest. It really just speaks boldly on the whole idea of how that something can come into existence as a reality. And I like how you mentioned that orchids are fragile flowers, and how it gives the idea about people who feel they are too fragile to be out there enjoying the city, enjoying the light, like the, not necessarily the city, but, you know, the night, you know, the beauty of it. I really like also how she says, like spotted salamanders taming fire. Just a really great line right there. You know, just a strong right all the way through, and it really speaks boldly on the whole idea of how there is almost that beauty found within, that there is that beauty found within the darkness. So just a wonderful right and very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
Balancing Your True Colors by Time Teller. All right, we got Balancing Your True Colors by Time Teller. Balance. Color balance. Work balance. Life balance. Mental balance. Balance. Between ignorance and knowledge, justice and punishment, observation and judgment, middle ear, tune, tone deaf. We don't hear you anymore. See? Tightrope. Safety nets cause more harm than good. Tightrope. Safety net. Spider's webs of gassing and hate. Tightrope. Safety net of pretense. Vindictive pain. We hate each other now. Your lack of balance. Boats in the sea. Out on a limb precariously. Wobble, wibble, trip, lean to, list, capsize, head over heels, obsession, repetitive, psychosis, turmoil, chaos, Brownian bumping, randomly, chances, drifting in one direction, walk in circles, in a desert of repetitive demands, unbalanced beliefs and opinions, stubborn refusal, too many coincidences, too many repeats, and so never playing your game and pump.
Wonderful read there, Rex, and really a great write by Time Teller. One of the things I particularly like about it, this is, as I was mentioning earlier in the show, with this particular painting of Wassily Kandinsky, is there's a real sense of balance, of mathematics, measurements, but especially of balance. And I like that he, Time Teller, repetitively uses the word balance, but it doesn't become just about the balance in creating art, but rather the balance of life, finding the balance between work and the rest of life, finding the balance to keep yourself emotionally, physically, and mentally strong. I really like where he says, ear, middle ear, tune, tone deaf, we don't hear you anymore. See, there's that whole idea of the ear working together. It works really well on a metaphorical level, and the idea of people who choose to be deaf. I also really like how the tightrope safety nets that, you know, cause more harm than good. It's that whole idea that if you keep, if you got to learn that tough, first of all, it makes you think of tough love and the idea that if you keep putting that safety net out for somebody, they're never going to learn. It also makes me think about how there were, Lewis and Clark and other explorers of that time period, they wanted men and their parties that couldn't swim. Oftentimes the French explorers and other explorers who took canoes on the waterways, because they felt like the people that swam were more likely to be reckless and put not only people's lives in danger, but also put the supplies in danger, and it's not like they could be easily replaced. So I particularly like that stanza. And I also like this ending with the idea of never too many coincidences, and I like that he separated coal and incidences, and the idea that the play on word with coincidences was really clever in the idea that the idea of a coal conspiracy. I really liked that. It's very well done. And Rex, I'm looking forward to your thoughts.
Well, the underlying bent to this is it walks in today's world. There is no balance. There is no real observation and judgment. And he hits on a number of things, the underlying narratives that walk themselves, spiderwebs of gassing and hate. That paints an easy visual as to what's going on there. Tightrope safety net of pretense, vindictive paint. We hate each other now. Your lack of balance. And hits this noted pointing of fingers there. See what else? Unbalanced beliefs and opinions, stubborn refusal. Like I said, too many coincidences, too many repeats. And so never playing your game. That's the idea of seeing what is, what it really is finally, because of all that has been wrought, all that has been played out, and it's done in such a repetitive manner that it can no longer be ignored or swept under the carpet, because they're doing their best at it, but it ain't working out, because when it comes to everything in this world, nothing disappears. It never deletes. It can be rabbit holes, but somewhere down the line, somebody saved everything.
Absolutely. Yeah, that is a really good point there, Rex. And, because nothing really truly completely disappears. Sooner or later, something is found out. So, well said there. All right. And what do we got next?
What was it? Inner necessity, on an adjunct plane by T. Michelle. And that one's definitely going to be yours.
Okay. Inner Necessity on an Adjacent Plane by T. Michelle. Red is the smallest of the softest palaces, scrapping the streams, unblocked in the fivefold clouds of an eternal journey. My thumb redeems its sculpted vibrancy. I tickle her deep nakedness, sleep in her narrow emblems, and infraction breaks through the pattern of a thin scrape. Its foundation is laid in ash and sterile sin, the greater of the evil reared with purgation, a psychotic disjoint desire living underneath what is invisible, the ultimate heaven in a trail of murmurs. My respite are her flags, steeped in crescent streaks, and a fistful of warm violations coated with celestial ice. Her hypnotic symbol caresses plain knockout sleeves. Within her spirit are strokes of whirlwind brushed on an espadrille-like unapproached dew, splintery, incomplete, fled off by a chipping bezel. Yet it creates such light on shaded corrosive lines, oil cloth of shipwrecked crystals blazoned in angular grief. Fine white balls defiant of the black crisscrosses splashed by the sheer force of rondelays. I double back to its flax, bending to her twisted bones, brilliantly serenading a palette knife with augmented squares and magnetic circles. In gray chives, red waves, her ruby wings. End poem. I tell you, T. Michelle just has some of the most stunning use of imagery and metaphors. And Rex, your thoughts on this poem?
Well, there's one thing. I like that. Yet it creates such light on shaded, corrosive lines, oil cloth, shipwrecked crystals, blazoned in angular grief. That's a nice touch of thought right there. It kind of hits on the parts of the picture, the way you view things, because there is notions to the way things are angled and bent, and you could see a fish in there, you could see all manner of things, but the idea, because everything's kind of a full bend to abstract, just something dripping out of one's hand, you're just rolling along in the thought in the moment. And I had the red is the smallest of the soft talises. Oh, that's a nice touch. I like that opening line. And then my thumb redeems its sculpted vibrancy. I tickle. Is that sort of holding up your thumb like you usually get in the cartoons with the artist? As they use their thumb as a reference point for a particular view that you want to express. And then there's this touch right here of maybe a little bit of sensuality. Its foundation is laid in ash and sterile sin, the grate of evil reared with purgation, a psychotic disjoint desire living underneath what is invisible, or actually taking that stroll within that invisible is another way to look at it. A fistful of warm violations, again, that sort of... maybe a sensual or sexual undertone to the thought of going on. Chipping a bezel, I like that notation too. And white balls defined of black crisscrosses splashed by the sheer force of rondelays. Some great lines. And the thought of flax bending through a twisted bone. The palette knife was another nice touch of... hitting on the fact that it's not just all about the brushes. There is a palette knife that can be used, and it has various in shapes and sizes.
Yeah, I really like that idea, too, that part that, you know, and then you bring up a couple times the sensuality within, and there is a kind of a delicate sensuality, because I think creating in itself, any like form of art, but particularly when you're allowed to caress the canvas with the brush or with the palette knife, there's a real sense of sensuality and free within that freedom and concentration of movement. I do really like the reference to a chipping bezel, like the chipping away of time itself. The foundation is laid in ash and sterile sin, the greater of evil beard with purgation. Wonderful lines there. There's to me a real sense of self-observation within the artist. And I did like, I double back to its lax bending to her twisted bone. I thought there was really this great personification of the artwork, of the creation itself. So just a wonderful write all the way through and very well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
The blue write is on, off, on.
All right, and we have a recording for that. So let me find that, and here we go.
Light is the Meadow Paved by Diane D. White picket.
Hey, what? You pressed the wrong button.
Yeah, so that one was obviously the wrong one. So would you go ahead, Rex, and give that a read, please?
All right. The Blue Rider's on, off, on. Blue winter's forest collides into exteriors of cyclonic motion, ear-piercing pain, hot, bleak desert extremities, buttery form meets dark matter as navel of earth warm wraps mist. Elephant tusked ivories, flapping dumb ears to sky. Dante's chords from Hades flow red volcanic lava hot, red from wide colored contours, smooth into shapeless nine circles, as old Catholics believe. If so, these harshest peak ties revive and shut angular molecular structures, so atoms are swallowed midst its core. Thing of Hollywood piss dance, nothingness, pure chaos. Small form dances, smoke-chipped figures swirl art, dim contrasted neath white luminosities of earthbound dreaming. None revile its cloven hoof visions. So, small paint, we figures, when contrasted to hide fire-drowned towers, conceptually constructed in miniature, still sad creator breathes hallowed within. Bright, girlish man face fills the smoky mirror. Such is our black barred imprisonment. Kind, pale, canary yellow kitchen eyes, tenacity, clear ruler of this and all which sounds worthy, releasing it into beyond. Christ's fish-laden symbols welcome a dead god's fate from alabaster canals reviled, through shadows of this light darkened triangle, towards a whisper of moon, shimmering neat symbols of ironies, as a leaf and a feather reviled through winking neon, blue riders on, off, on, and call.
Wonderful read there, Rex. I really like this. Now, he wrote to the painting Der Blaue Reiter, or otherwise translated the Blue Rider, which is also a art movement. The art movement Der Blaue Reiter was a movement of German expressionism and was named after the painting of the same name. And while they had no official manifesto, the idea of that movement was to to find the spirituality in the mundane. They often pursued non-objective or abstract painting, and it was widely read in avant-garde artistic circles across Europe and beyond. And they had the idea that color and form carried concrete spiritual values. I really feel like there's a sense of that spirituality, that sense of color and movement within Richard's poem. I really liked Dante's chorus from Hades' floor and volcanic lava, hot red from wide colored contours, smooth into shape with nine circles as old Calyx weaved it, so these harshest peaks ties revive in sharp angular molecular structures. There's such almost violent imagery there, in the idea that life is created from mythology. I really also liked how he goes blue riders on, off, on at the end, and I thought you added perfect emphasis with that reading there, Rex. And to me, that last part really just kind of speaks on how color is used. Hind, pale, canary, yellow, kitchen eye, tenacity, clear ruler of this and all which sounds worthy, bravely kissing the face of death. Really strong lines in the idea that how imagery and color is used within creation. Just a great write all the way through and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
I think he's kind of hitting on a number of things. Mitch Elephant Tusk Ivory's Planting Dummy is the Sky. Kind of paints the sort of killing the elephants for their ivory. And that's sort of Dante's chords. Old Catholics believe that so these harshest peaks revive in sharp angular molecular structures, the atoms are swallowed in this core. Sting of hollowed piss and nothingness. There's kind of a thought right there that too many people have walked away from religious values because there seems to be a serious disconnect. What else we got here? None reviolets cloven hoof visions. So small, paint we figures when contrast the hide. Fire drowned towers. Fire drowned towers had me thinking of the Twin Towers in New York. And none reviolets cloven hoof visions is that added thought to of too many are walking, have no fear of the devil or evil. There seems to be a nice alignment there, which shouldn't be a birth in the first place, because once you travel that road, there's nothing attainable back on the other side. They hit on Christ's fish-laden symbols, welcome to dead God's faith. I kind of hit on that notion God is dead and I killed him. I forget who said that. Shimmering these symbols of ironies and those things we relegate to that which is important instead of realizing it isn't that which is important. It's that which is held to heart as something real that is important. But it's the old it kind of, that blue writer's on, off, on is kind of, yo, quit playing. Either stay on the horse or get off altogether. One side or the other. You can't have both.
I like that thought. I like that thought. Quit playing around, get off the horse, or stay on.
It's either shit or get off the pot.
Exactly. Well said there. Great show tonight. Wonderful poetry. Thank you as always, Rex. I always appreciate you. And of course, everyone who wrote for the show, who is listening now or will be listening later, we truly appreciate you all. Make sure to check out upcoming contests for upcoming shows, particularly Rex's contest for Rhythm and Rhyme on Sunday that features the music of ZZ Top. All right, well, have a good night.
All right, good night.
Have a good night.